Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course, the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.org. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be joined by Chris Weeks. Chris is an editorial photographer out of Los Angeles, California, does a lot of great work, shoots a lot of film, really cool photography, and a really 100% stand-up, true-to-life, real cat. No BS with Chris. He tells you how it is. And we're going to talk today about him, his work, his use of film, and what's been going on with Chris Weeks. Chris, how you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Hey, thanks for joining us on the program. Great to have you with us to talk about yourself, your photography, and all this cool work you're up to.
Thanks a lot. I enjoy being here, and thanks for having me.
No, it's great. So, Chris, explain to our listeners exactly what you do so people can get a sort of a grasp on what you're up to before we get in here a little deeper.
Well, professionally, I'm an editorial photographer. I shoot for magazines all over the planet. I'm syndicated. My work can be from shooting editorial portraits to shooting an event for Sony or Coca-Cola or whoever. Usually it's a little bit celebrity heavy, and one of the reasons they use me is because the celebrities like me and know that I'm not going to syndicate a photo that makes them look bad.
Now, I think if people look at your website and look at some of your images, they can get a sort of a grasp on what you've been shooting. You must have a good rapport with some of these people because you get some access that a lot of people don't.
Yeah, and I'm very fortunate to get that kind of access. I think that if you look at chrisweeks.net, my professional billboard, quote-unquote, 90% of that's actually shot in film. I think actually more than 90% of it. And in fact, I think probably about 90% is in black and white.
How much do you find, Chris, that these people wanting these editorial coverage, even if it be Sony for an event or, like you said, some corporate client, what are they looking for and why would they ask you to shoot the stuff on film? And I'm sure a lot of your work is digital, but you're still shooting film and a fair amount of it. Why do they want film?
Well, I think that some clients are looking for a certain look. I'm not sure if it was Focus Features, but it was one of the independent arms of Universal, and they did a movie called Hollywoodland. And they specifically asked me to shoot film. And I mean, I shot 3 Leica bodies and lots and lots and lots of film. And I mean, that one was set in the 30s or 40s, so they kind of wanted that film noir look. So that would be one of the reasons they asked. Other clients ask just because they know I enjoy shooting film. just about 3 weeks ago, I was up in Portland and Seattle and San Francisco, and I shot lots of film through an old Rolly twin lens reflex and a Leica MP, which is my favorite camera. And I did that only because I felt like shooting film. Some days I just feel like shooting film. It makes it so much easier, too, if I know I'm going on some kind of trip or something where I know I just bring a film body, a few lenses, and 20 rolls of film. I don't have to worry about a computer, cables, batteries, backup drives, chargers. It's easier packing the gear. It's so much easier. I look for the body, the rolls, an extra battery, even though I don't really need an extra battery with Leica stuff, and three different emulsions of film, and I'm good to go.
Do you find that these people that you're shooting, these celebrities and other people that you're shooting up, do they actually find a better connection with you because you're shooting a Leica or you're shooting film?
It's very interesting. I'm one of the guys who gets to roam. I get to go anywhere I want. It's an all-access pass, and I prefer to use that kind of access to make different photos. I just don't want the headshot, the half-length, the full-length, and the candid. I want real moments. I'm going to get those other kinds of shots, but I'm also going to get stuff for myself, which the clients also like. And I've had people come up to me, and they'll say, and I'm not naming names, but probably C or D-listers, and they've said, why haven't you ever shot me with that camera? I do shoot other people with that camera, and when it's film, and I've done the math, it comes out to be about 50 cents a frame. I'm not going to waste money. I'd rather shoot it on A-listers and some B-listers, but it's funny that people notice.
No, and people, I think if they can sort of get the grasp of an all-access, because a lot of the shots on your website and the entertainment section are behind the gate of the typical press access.
Right.
It's quite interesting to have a shot from the typical press and all these guys shooting digital on a celebrity. And you're getting a back shot of that actually gives someone sort of this shark frenzy atmosphere.
Well, when you're shooting the line, you're behind a stanchion or a rope, usually a stanchion, and you're getting one view. I'm hired to show all the views. They can't have a lot of people in front of the line, so I'm basically the eyes for millions of people. And what's going on isn't just going one way. There's lots of stuff going on, and I'm actually trying to show the way the celebrity feels, too, and what they see. Because they're part of the moment as well. It's not just all about them, it's about the environment they're in. So I don't know if you've ever had 150 people calling your name and shooting a photo of you.
Personally, no.
It's a trippy, surreal experience. So I'm trying to look at maybe the way the celebrity feels about it as well. I mean, a lot of them get used to it, but I mean, having 100 plus people yelling at you and flashing cameras at you, it's a trip. And it's actually a little harder than sitting behind the line, because in that context, it's a fishbowl. You're shooting kind of what they want you to see. And I actually have to worry about getting out of their way, about getting out of the talent's way, and it makes my job much more difficult. It's much easier to sit behind the line and just boom, 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 boom. But because I want different kinds of looks and different contexts, I actually get exhausted after doing it for a couple hours.
No, because you really have to think on what you're doing. You're not just, like you said, standing behind a line and blasting a 12-gauge into a fishbowl.
Right, and I'm also not putting it on P or A or whatever other automatic setting. I'm rolling around. I'm dragging my shutter, trying to anticipate flashes from other people and tightening down so I can use their light and dragging the shutter so maybe I can pick up some of their light. I'm thinking a lot when I'm shooting, and my cameras are always on M.
So let's talk about roughly here just for a quick second on gear. Your film work is mainly all Leica now, correct?
Let's see, a Leica M6 TTL and all the fast glass. For medium format, I use a Contax 645. For other personal stuff, I use a Rolly. It's from 1954 or something like that. It's old, older than me.
So let's say you're going to go out and shoot a gig on Friday night and it's for an entertainment piece. What are you going to bring for film?
I find that Delta 400 scans really nice, so I'll bring Delta 400. And I have tens of thousands of rolls of it, so I know how it reacts to just about everything.
So you can get away with one emulsion for a whole evening.
Right. And it's funny, there's not a huge amount of events that I would shoot during the day, but if there is a daylight thing, I like to use APX 25, because then I can put an ND filter on and shoot at 1.0, which gives it a completely different look. And yeah, I know Canon makes glass that goes to 1.2, but I don't find it's very good glass. I know people love it. It's cool. Let them love it.
Well, I think in the context of a big SLR, it's okay, but it's not like the Leica stuff.
It's completely different. It's apples and oranges.
So you find that you shoot everything wide open then?
I shoot pretty much everything wide open. this glass is designed to be the best glass wide open of any manufacturer. So why would I want to stop it down? I usually want to isolate my subject too, and I want to force you to look where I want you to look.
No, I think that's great. I love to shoot everything wide open myself, but then a lot of people buy good glass and they'll stop it down just so they make sure they have the shot. And I think that's chicken. They're scared. They don't know what they're doing.
They are scared, or maybe that's just what they're used to looking at, or maybe they really like deep focus. I'm not a huge deep focus fan.
If you're shooting landscapes, I guess it's cool.
Yeah, I don't really shoot a whole hell of a lot of landscapes. I mean, I will shoot landscapes if I'm somewhere and I want to remember that, but that's largely for myself. Or if it's part of a travel story and you have to do some kind of like establishing shot, yeah, fine. I guess that's landscape. But I don't like HDR. But I don't think you can do HDR with film. Maybe a really big scan you could, but I don't know.
Yeah, you can do a 3 or 4 part scan, but I don't know.
I'm not into that look.
No, and people that shoot interiors and some architectural work, you can get away with the HDR stuff and it looks correct, but everybody overprocesses stuff so much that it just looks funky.
And there's a time and place for everything. And like you said, architectural, those guys, I can totally understand why they would, for dynamic range, do HDR. Because I'm sure when I looked at Architectural Digest, I've seen stuff that I'm like, that looks like HDR. But that's not what I shoot. I like to shoot reality because what I'm shooting is going to be seen by a lot of eyes. And I don't want to lie to those eyes. I want them to see exactly what I saw. Even if that means shooting wide open, I'm still going to force you to look where I want you to look. But I'm not lying to you. I mean, that's the way it was.
Plus, I don't think people realize how difficult it is to shoot that Leica glass wide open because it has such a narrow band. And it takes a lot of practice to be able to nail it.
It takes a lot of practice. And shooting video and film projects now, shooting wide open is a huge challenge. Because that's the way I'm used to seeing things. And so, of course, any kind of film project, like meaning motion project, I'm going to see the same way I see shooting film or digital. So it's been very interesting.
Let's chat about workflow here. So let's say you go out and shoot a gig and you're done at 2 in the morning. What happens then?
Well, it really depends on the gig. A lot of times I hand over my card to somebody and they have voice tags so they know who everybody is. And I go home and make some pasta and then I go to bed. But if it's all on me, like it will be tonight, I dump the folder into Photo Mechanic because this is a workflow that would be for like syndication. And I want to be done really quick, and there's nothing that will plug into Aperture. So dump it into Photo Mechanic. I do my selects very quickly. I copy those files to a folder, and I have to use a thing called GIFT, which is a captioning and transmission software package. It's not publicly available. I do some Photoshopping, a caption, and then I FTP, and I'm done. Let's say I shoot up to 500 or 600 frames. I can be done with that in less than an hour.
Are you shooting everything raw or in JPEG when you're shooting digital?
It really depends on the assignment and what lighting conditions I expect, but primarily it's JPEG, just for speed.
Sure.
They don't care. People who don't know think you have to shoot everything in raw, but they have no practical experience. I am a big believer in practical experience. Being theoretical about things is great. If you want to be theoretical of other people being theoretical, but they largely have no practical experience. So what is their opinion, really? It doesn't matter.
No. How about a film workflow? Let's say you do actually have a client that says, okay, well, Chris, I want this black and white on film. What do you do then?
I shoot it and then put it in an envelope, put it in the night drop, and I've already made arrangements with the lab for someone to either come in a little early or actually stay there that late. It depends on the budget. The last one, the movie studio, when I said, well, this is going to be a 200% rush, they looked at me like I was a dumbass. But I want everybody to know that it's going to be more money. And they look at me like, oh, what do you think? We have no money? Which wouldn't be the case with them. And in this case, there was someone there about 1 in the morning. They processed. And by the time I woke up, and I woke up especially early, I already had all the film scanned and on my FTP site. I downloaded it from FTP and then threw it in the Aperture. I did my selects, did a little bit of levels, and exported, sent it to their FTP. So by 10 o'clock in the morning, they had worked up exports, and they were happy as hell.
So I think it just goes to show that with using a good lab, especially the one you're using, that people can still shoot film on an on-demand, on-need basis and get away with it.
Oh, they totally can. It's dependent upon a good lab and a client with, these days, a little bit deeper pockets.
Right, but even a 200% upcharge for something done in the middle of the night is still not really cost prohibitive.
No, not at all. And I talked to friends of mine in different parts of the world, and you can't even get E6 overnight in Milan anymore.
That's crazy to think about that you can't get E6 done in Milan.
Because when I was an assistant, we would bring in 1,000 rolls of Velvia 220, 1,000 rolls of 36 exposure, and do snip tests and wait for them and judge each snip test and then give processing instructions per roll. I mean, it's amazing to me that in some parts of the world, you can't do that now.
Yeah, the whole E6 thing is sort of a bummer these days.
I mean, it really is. Because, honestly, there's nothing like seeing a Velvia slide. There's nothing like it. I've seen the most beautiful digital files ever created by every single system out there. And still nothing. When I shoot a 4x5 Velvia slide, it's so beautiful.
Do you shoot very much chrome anymore, or mainly just black and white and egg?
Honestly, if I'm doing a travel story, I want to do a lot of the things that I know are going to really benefit from punchy, beautiful colors. I'll shoot it with slide. And it's usually Velvia or Provia. And then if there's people involved in it, I'll shoot Portra. I really love Portra. And I think coming from the film world, it makes it easier. Now, I've never been a film burner. I don't just burn frames to burn frames, because when you shoot for a wire service and you're shooting, I don't know, let's say something small like the Oscars, and you have just burned and burned and burned, you get nasty text messages, and maybe an editor will walk out and say, "What are you doing? Like, what are you doing?" I've seen people just fired on the spot. Get out, because you shot too much.
You don't need to shoot that much. People don't realize that. And I think a lot of these cats that are shooting digital, they put the stuff on burn and just let it spray.
Right. And you can do it these days. You can do it at 21 megapixels. Those are fat files. Those are big to ingest. And that's a lot of work for an editor. So coming from the film world, and I'm not saying that everybody's like this and everybody who's been in film, but I think it makes you more selective about the shots you make. And then in the editing process, which is probably more important than the shooting process, I think it hones your view as to what you want the client to see. That's what a lot of people don't realize. I mean, they just go out and buy a digital camera and upload 2,000 photos to Flickr and get pissed off that no one looks at their stuff. Because I get an email at least one a day about, like, hey, look at my stuff. And if I just click it and I have time or something and I see you have 3,000 photos, I'm not even going to respond to you, because clearly you don't know. And I feel bad. I'd like to be able to respond to more people. If I just see 50 or 60 photos and they're well edited, then I'll maybe say what I think about their work. You're wasting my time if you think I'm going to look at 3,000 freaking photos. I don't even want to look at 3,000 of my own photos.
No, it's completely overwhelming. I mean, that's the case. If you go to look at somebody's gig, okay, well, here's 30 photos or 50, or here's a couple sets of 20. Okay, well, cool. But like you said, 3,000 plus. I can't see how these people that are shooting digital weddings these days and they're coming up with 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 images from a one-day gig.
Well, the only time I see that is if I'm doing a time lapse.
Well, yeah, there you go. But to each his own, whatever. Like you said, I think they really have the point that I think they don't have confidence in their own photography and their own work.
Yeah, they can get on the internet and forum and claim they have all this experience, and they'll give everybody else advice. I don't even know why they do it, because it's totally lying. If you don't have practical experience, why would you ever tell anybody else how to do something?
That's a problem with stuff that's on the internet these days, because anybody can publish, and if you can find people to listen, then I think people take you with some sort of respect or some sort of validity in what you're saying, and really 90% of it is complete BS.
Oh, and we're talking about not just people on forums, but people who actually have well-known blogs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, honestly, if you are going to write about photography, let's see your gallery. Let's see what you've done. I mean, I don't care if you've been to school. I don't care if you have a BFA or an MFA. I don't care if you taught. I don't care if you've written for a magazine. Let's see your work. Because I think that people make the counter-argument that, well, I know a steak if I don't like it. I know a movie if I don't like it. Well, that's completely different. If you're talking about photography and telling other people what to buy, what to do, how to do something, let's see your work.
Well, I think the problem being is people that actually know what they're doing and have done this kind of stuff, there's only a few people out there that can really stand behind their credentials and back up what they're saying.
I think that these days there's more and more, though, because I even know a friend of mine, Randall Slavin, amazing editorial photographer. He has a blog, and he's the real deal. He works every day.
Well, typically you won't find that, because guys that are working every day aren't going to waste their time on a blog.
Well, I kind of thought that as well, and I clearly don't spend every day on my blog. I mean, I did 2 last week. I'm not really sure why, but I did. I found the time somehow. But like Philip Bloom in the video world, I know for a fact that guy works every day. And I don't know if that guy sleeps or has like a meth problem or something, but that guy is a content powerhouse and he's not full of shit. He's the real deal.
So true. There's a few out there.
So there are a few out there, and it's just absolutely hilarious what you find out there of people who, I'm not going to name specific sites, but I think everybody who is out there would know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Chris, let's chat about how did you even get into photography? What made you want to be an editorial photographer? Or a photographer at anything at that point?
I was going to say, as a photographer in general, I think it boiled down to that I didn't want to forget stuff. I see so many things, and I remember being 10 years old, sitting in the back of the car, and I would literally close my eyes and remember what I saw, and remember composition. I know it sounds weird. And I learned darkroom in 7th grade, and I processed all my own black and white printed stuff that I felt like printing. And I wrote this weekly article about my school for the local newspaper. I remember when I got my first photo published, and I was like 11 and a half years old. And I've really never looked back since. I always knew this was something I would do.
So what got you to the point to actually do this in a professional manner? Did you just have acquired gear one day and says, well, this is what I'm going to do, and you kept doing it? Did you assist people? What did you do to actually get into this gig?
I would say in my early 20s, I shot for a lot of lifestyle magazines. And I did actually a lot of work in the international polo world. Horses, not water. I shoot some water polo now, but that's only because my daughter's on a water polo team.
Cool.
But it was horse polo, and that opened a lot of doors because, believe it or not, a lot of people were interested in that kind of photography and that kind of content. I don't remember how exactly, but I did a lot of work in the search and rescue market. Like, I had to do a week of training of how to climb really tall stuff. That was really frightening. When I was about 25, a friend of mine, he was an assistant for a big car photographer, and he ended up getting some of his own editorial gigs, and he asked me to assist him, which turned into like 5 years of watching him go from editorial to ad shooter. Then it was probably about 3 days a week that I would help him out. But I had another business. I was a consultant, and I had other people that worked for me, so it kind of worked out. I could go wherever I wanted and still run a business from a cell phone. It was one of those brick phones, of course. And then, let's see, I shot a story on Santa Barbara. During that time, there was a film festival, and I got credentialed, which I didn't even know you had to get credentialed to do stuff like that. And I got introduced to the world of publicists, and from that point on, that was 1999, I got a syndication gig, and I've never looked back since.
So how about some tips, or let's say somebody thinks they want to do PR, editorial, press coverage, this type of work. How would you recommend to someone if they even want to get into this, or even if they should?
It's a different world now. You'll pretty much not have any rights to your photos because everything's buyout. So you'll be doing work for hire for the most part. Yeah, there's that 1% who that won't apply to, but the industry has been so oversaturated. And I know that I'm sure people back in the 70s and 80s, they said that when they looked back in the day. But these days, because of digital, it has just become even more so. How do you get noticed in editorial? I mean, some people want to see a book. Some people want to see a PDF. Some people want to see a website.
I guess it's that catch-22, though. I mean, how do you get credentialed to shoot these kinds of editorial and entertainment or any kind of news type of story unless you have a book already to be able to get those credentials from some outlet? So it's sort of like you got to have one and the other at the same time, almost. It's hard.
Well, yes, but I think that people skills are very important to a photographer. And sadly, a lot of photographers I know, they don't really have good people skills. They'd rather just take pictures.
And you're talking people skills in regards to dealing with editorial contacts, PR people, or is it mainly people skills in regards to who you're shooting?
How about people skills in totality? I mean, isn't that why most of these guys will never shoot and they're just on forums bickering back and forth?
Right.
I mean, a friend of mine who owns DeviantArt, his name's Angelo, he's a sage. The guy, 27 years old, really, really intelligent. He asked me what the common denominator was for people who go on the web. And it's human contact. That's all they want. They crave it. And I think that there are good people on forums. There's good people on blogs. But I think they're outweighed by the amount of trolls out there. And even the trolls, they probably want it more than the people who know what they're talking about.
I think that's one thing they don't teach people, that you can go to a fine photography school, you can go to Brooks, you can go to Hallmark, you can go wherever you want, RIT. But they don't teach you how to deal with people. And like you said, if you can't deal with a PR company, a publicist, and have a rapport and be able to make a connection with them, I mean, you're out of luck.
You're 100% out of luck.
Right.
I mean, maybe that way you can learn 4x5 and just sit in the studio and move your camera a millimeter every 3 minutes.
Well, no, I mean, this is great information for people to really know that you need to be able to communicate with people and be able to strike up a conversation and be able to have some kind of meaningful contact.
A lot of people look at work and say, well, I can do that. That's not so great. Well, what they don't get is that they don't have the people skills that that guy has. And I say it myself. There's no reason that guy should have that kind of access. No reason. My daughter could do a better job. I could train someone on a street in 2 hours and they could shoot better. But what I couldn't teach them is people skills, because a lot of times you either have it or you don't. And that's why a lot of people succeed who may not be as good as a lot of other people out there, but they know how to bullshit their way into the right situation.
Yeah, I think that's the next issue is you have some that don't have the skills, and then you have some that are so over the top that where do you cut it off between reality and BS? Especially if you're dealing with people in PR organizations and you have these young girls straight out of college that are in a PR position, can be sort of overwhelmed and consumed very easily.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, how many times have I worked an assignment and there's someone who's 23 years old telling me what to do? And I just smile because I get it. It doesn't offend me because it's just funny.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, I've done my job longer than they have. A, had the job, B, been to college, C, been to high school, and yet they're experts.
So do you find that people that want to do this type of editorial work, there's still a viable reason to shoot film, and people can actually use analog capture and, of course, do this work?
The number is getting smaller and smaller, though, because the clients want it yesterday. If you're shooting tethered, they want to see it right then. They want to see it on a screen. You can't do that with film. But that said, there are people that have developed their look just with film. When I go to my lab, I know Amanda DeCadene. She shoots with this Contax 645. That's all she shoots with. Beautiful stuff. Only film. She's kind of one of the last holdouts I know. I mean, I know in the wedding world, there's quite a few people who just shoot film.
It's interesting, in the wedding market, there's people that have either shot film previously or have been shooting digital only, and have started to notice film, get to know it more, and there's more people now moving over that are going either back or going to film that were previously shooting digital that got on the big digital craze, and now they've jumped ship and moved back.
I'm not really sure who could succeed better. Is it the person who came from the film world and went to digital? I personally think that that person succeeds better than the person who is in digital and then discovers film, because it's a lot more difficult to shoot film than it is digital. You can't look at the monitor.
Yeah, I don't know if it's experience or just something, but when you're shooting film, you know you have it. And if you don't know that, then you're not confident on your own skills, then I guess it could be very stressful for somebody that's never experienced that before.
What's also nice is that with film, archivally, you got it. Even if you redundantly back up 8 times, it's still ones and zeros. It can be wiped out. But if it's on film, it's usually in some kind of special box that has special kinds of glue that won't degrade the image. And they'll last forever. My whole daughter's life, I specifically used film to document her life. Of course, I made digital photos of her, of course. But most of the really memorable photos I've made of my kid were all film.
So which lab are you using there in fabulous Los Angeles?
Richard Photo Lab. They're seriously the best in Los Angeles.
Some would say the best anywhere now, anywhere.
I know that people in whatever part of the country or the world talk about their lab and how good it is. I've been to a lot of labs for a long time, and nobody has done the job that Richard Photo Lab has done. Okay. You guys are on it. They get it. I think their prices are pretty damn good, too.
No, they are. Look at a lot of places. Look at a lot of cats in New York. It'll cost you $10 or $12 for development, but then it's another $30 or $40 for a goofy scan. And I think the guys at Richard, Brian and Bill and all the guys over there really have their deal down. They've started to cater to people that are shooting volume and event photographers and wedding, and they got the whole deal with the development and the scan, because face it, it's all hybrid workflow now.
Oh, yeah. I just remembered when I went to one lab, it was basically known for their black and white stuff, and ostensibly they were pretty good. I was kind of tired of their dirty scans, and I went to them because the prior guy scratched a bunch of my negs, and I mean, I thought I was going to kill him. But when this one place went out in L.A., they either merged or were sold to A&I, and I've never really had a good experience with A&I. Back in the day before they were bought by the headshot printer guy in Burbank, they were good. But once that happened, I don't know. Lots of people still go to ANI and they love it. Good for them. I never really had a great experience. But I went and shopped around for labs. And I asked a few of my friends who were still shooting a lot of film, and, oh, you got to go to this place. So I went there, and processing 36 exposure roll of black and white and medium scans was like over $30. And I laughed at them. And they said, oh, well, we're so-and-so. That's why it's that much. Funny that they went out of business 3 months later.
It's a new environment.
Yeah. One other person recommended that I went to Richard, and I rolled in there and spoke to everybody, started using them slowly, and now they do everything for me. And they have for the last 3 years, and they're going strong.
They are. They just moved into a new building, and they got some stuff consolidated together now, and they're cranking out some good work. You have to admit that.
Oh, I've got a 6-foot print on my wall they just did for me, which was a drum scan of a 35mm neg.
Wow. Cool.
So it looks really cool.
So do you find, Chris, that because of the connection you've made with a lot of these people that you're shooting, do you ever get contacted to do personal work or any kind of different jobs based off of these people seeing you and knowing who you are?
All the time.
Yeah?
I can't talk about a lot of the people that I shoot personally for, because that's one of the reasons they have me shoot. But I've shot all sorts of just private events for people who they know that they can trust me. And they know that their photos aren't going to end up somewhere where they shouldn't end up. They also know that I use labs like Richard, who do a lot of high-end stuff. There's not somebody in the back with a relationship with some PAP agency that's like, oh, I don't really care about my job. I can just sell this and make 25, 30 grand.
That's true. The stuff's secure there. You know when you send stuff to those guys, the file's not going to end up somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. I've sent private clients who also like photography as well, and they've asked me, where can I get my stuff done that I know it's not going to... I'm like, dude, they've seen way more confidential stuff than that, so you don't have to worry. I just shot for a very famous director, his 50th birthday. And at first, I just shot my normal 1DS Mark III with a flash. I'd say after about 10 flashes went off, he took me aside and he's like, you know what, I'm not feeling that. And the only reason I was using flash is because there were only 75 candles in a pretty big room. That was the only light. And luckily, I had an M9 prototype with me. Put it at 2500 ISO, put on a 1.0 lens, and I told him, like, we're a high ISO, and he's a bigger director as it comes, probably one of the biggest top 10 in Hollywood. So he knew when I was talking about ISO, and the color probably won't be there, because these are candles, but it's going to look artsy. And he said, fly on the wall, baby, do what you got to do. And he'd already paid me a lot of money. So I could have walked. I could have just said, I can't do it right now. So I shot the M9 prototype and an MP pushed to 1600. Beautiful stuff. And he couldn't have been happier. And pretty much didn't even know I was there.
I think, too, a lot of people that are in the entertainment industry, and especially in the LA area, and other photographers that advertise that they are 100% film shooters, or even that they do shoot film, people that are in that industry will actually search you out and want you to shoot their stuff because you are shooting film.
Oh, yeah. I did another birthday for an actor as big as it comes. Oscar winner, but I was able to shoot it all in film, and that's what he wanted. He knew my work, and he said, I just want you to shoot film and make it beautiful. It was pretty cool.
Chris, it's amazing that people don't really realize on how much money some of these images can bring in, and with you mentioning doing some of these private gigs, on how you could turn that into a lot of money. And it's just really cool to see that these people have their trust in you, that you're not going to go out and sell these images.
I mean, above and beyond the fact that many times there's a contract involved, and you agree to all these prejudgment crazy clauses, it could still outweigh selling some of this stuff. But I'd much rather have these people call me again, be happy to see my work. And a lot of them like my personal work, too. So,
well, too, people don't realize that just because they're A-list, B-list, or who cares what list they're on, movie stars or producers, they have a lot of money, it doesn't matter, they're still people, and they're going to recommend you to their friends. If they're working at 7-Eleven or they're an A-list Oscar winner, they're still people and they're going to recommend you. So you don't want to burn any bridges, no matter who it is.
No. And it's funny because I remember being in Vegas and this person I knew from, I think it was DeviantArt. She asked me to just come by because she was getting married on like a Tuesday at noon. I wasn't doing anything. And I actually ended up shooting her wedding for her, which I charge a lot of money to do that. But it was very nice to be able to send her a set of photos. So while it's nice to shoot for these big fancy people, some friends of ours are leaving the country for good, and they hadn't had a family portrait forever. So as much as I do not like doing that, and as much as I don't really want to work with a bunch of little kids, it's all good. I'm sure it'll be something that they'll have forever. So,
Well, no, you did something really cool for them. So it's a good karma points, I guess.
Yeah, and I want to make them a nice photo.
So give us a story here about some situation that was just crazy, over the top. Either it be dangerous or hilarious or who knows what. There must be something that is stuck in your mind that was just one occasion when you were out shooting that was just crazy.
I'd say it was about 94 or 95. I was doing a story about this search and rescue crew. And I'd done a week of training of how to climb stuff and get down from stuff and edge management, all this stupid stuff, right? We ended up arriving at our location after like 7 hours of driving to hike until about 4 or 5 in the morning. I photographed them doing all their training exercises and climbing mountains that I think is completely pointless. But on the way down, I'm stoked that I got everything I needed, and I hiked up with an F4 and an RZ67 with two lenses. Knew I had everything I needed. By the time we get down, they got a radio call that the local search and rescue crew was on a training mission somewhere else, and that they were the closest Mountain Rescue Association certified crew, and they had to go to an airport. All I wanted to do was go home and eat real food. I ended up getting on a Chinook helicopter, a U.S. Army helicopter, and flew to the top of Mount Whitney with this rescue crew because some poor schmuck was up there to ask his girlfriend to marry him. He was a big climber guy, and they were climbing some 5-point, I guess when it goes to a class 5 climb, then it goes point whatever, and it's degree of difficulty. Well, this is at the top degree of difficulty, and I guess homeboy didn't rappel down. He decided to try to climb down from this point he was at and developed 20 feet of rope slack and just slammed into this granite that wasn't very forgiving to his whole left side of his body. So I got to shoot this entire rescue from the belly of a Chinook.
How cool.
With a bleeding foot because idiot me took my backpack and didn't realize that I'd put on my Birkenstock sandals and my ice axe was pointing straight down, and I set down my 70-pound pack directly on my foot, which the rescue guys, of course, bandaged me up pretty well. But I'm sitting there with this like club foot in a harness being lowered through the belly of a Chinook helicopter that's buffeting in the wind at like 16,000 feet.
Pretty cool.
I do a lot of unit photography in old, old sound stages in Los Angeles, and inevitably the client will say, hey, can you get a shot from way up there? And these, they're called perms. They've been there for like close to 100 years, and they're catwalks. And you feel like you put your foot down, and you hear it squeak and move a little bit, but I've been able to see lots of really, really cool stuff and luckily make photos of it. I think I've gotten in more hairy situations doing street photography all over the world.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You ever tried to make street photographs in the red light district of Amsterdam?
No. Sounds like it'd be fun, though.
Yeah. Don't get caught.
I guess they don't like you taking pictures of those people that are around there.
They don't like it at all. But that's what makes it even more fun to me.
So, bringing up that, I'm assuming when you're doing a lot of your street work or something of that sort, even probably some of these other editorial gigs, you're actually just zone focusing and sort of being the fly on the wall then.
Rarely will I do that. I've gotten so good at focusing Leica. If I know it's 12 feet away, I'm going to put it around 12 feet. So once it's up to my eye, it's just a micro adjustment and boom, it's there. And even in low light, I don't think anything's as good as using a Leica rangefinder in low light. For me, it's instantaneous.
So what does Chris look forward to? I mean, you've been doing unbelievable gigs. You get to shoot the coolest people on the planet. They pay you lots of dough. But what do you want to do? What haven't you got to do yet in your photography career that you want to do?
Well, I think like anybody in Hollywood, I just want to be a director.
So the bottom line is you want to just be a DP.
I actually think the way things are going now, a director who can shoot, I don't know, it's such a brave new world right now in filmmaking. Just this past weekend, I was at the Paramount lot and got to see the last episode of House, which was shot with a 5D, projected on a 60-foot screen. And I was surrounded by really experienced DPs, a theater full of them. And when they projected that first scene, the collective gasped. It was something beyond anything I ever expected. So saying that these little DSLRs can't get it done, I don't know. It's a brave new world. I mean, in a context, I already tell stories frame by frame. So given the equipment that's available to me now, I'm able to tell a story the way I want to tell a story, not with some deep focus third of an inch chip on some little video camera. I've actually been shooting 3 film projects. And one of them I've been shooting for at least a couple months. And a friend of mine, we had drinks the other night, and he's like, hey, I shot my film in 3.5 days. I took 3.5 days to do one shot. And because it's for my reel right now, I can do that.
Do you think that with your background in shooting film and knowing how to expose correctly, has helped you with this transition into digital cinema and shooting the stuff with the 5D?
Just like if you're shooting for a wire service and you overshot by 20 times, in the editorial process, you just created a cluster. You know what? It ain't good. So I will get my exposure nailed in camera so that when I'm in post, I don't have to screw with it. I see a lot of films. I did some unit stills and some publicity shots in this big Hollywood $100 million feature. And I saw one of the rough cuts, and I could tell in the blacks, it was that fuzzy, gross, whatever it is. You could tell they took this and pumped it with levels or whatever they use in post. I mean, to me, that takes away from the story. A few bad frames, a few bad seconds, it just interrupted me thinking of the story. But then again, I'm a film asshole, so I'd rather see it was perfectly exposed. And I think it makes it easier in the long run if it's perfectly exposed. And I learned how to perfectly expose stuff because I came from the film world. I didn't have the luxury of pulling it up on the screen saying, "Ooh, shit, I'm 3 stops under, or I'm 2 stops over."
No, when you're shooting chrome, you don't get that luck.
No, I mean, that's why we did snip tests on thousands of rolls. We were going for being within a third of a stop.
Do you shoot with a meter now, a light meter, or you use what's built into whatever gig you have?
Well, what I'm shooting right now, everything's with the 5D, the 7D, and the Mark IV. And I know that shooting at 24 frames a second, I want to be at a 50th of a second. So knowing I have to be at a 50th, I can usually judge. And between the 5D and the Mark IV, 70 is a little less versatile. But you have 12 different emulsions in your camera, 12 different speeds. So you just roll the ISO and try to go as low as possible and try to go as close to multiples of the native ISO. So once I do my mental guesstimate, I see what I've got on the monitor and make micro adjustments from there. So it really does help. There's a lot less futzing around.
Very, very cool. So, Chris, I know you did some cool videos with Damien over at Photo Induced. You have, of course, your website, your blog. Where can people find out and look at what you've been up to and all this beautiful photography you're doing?
I post every couple weeks on my blog at aphotocontributor.com. I rarely update my website. I do it about once a year. Every time I have to pay the yearly payment, I think about updating the site. I did a documentary on street photography. You can find it at vimeo.com/Chris Weeks. I update a lot on Facebook, but I don't add all that many people. I do a lot of mobile uploads that I do with the iPhone, which I adore.
Yeah, it is a cool little device, and the cameras are getting better, and the new version looks like it's going to be
cooler. Oh my god, 5 megapixels? Are you kidding me? And I think you're going to be able to edit video. I can't believe it.
It is cool. And you know what's cool about it? It's great to see that you've adopted this technology, but you still have a love for film and you're still shooting film and you know when to use what tool at the right gig and how all this stuff is incorporated. It's great.
And sometimes it's just a feeling. I'll just go out and make street photographs just because I had a feeling that day that I wanted to do it with film. And I think about my photographs a lot before I make them. But I find that with film, you really do think about the photographs you make even more.
No, I think so, and I think if people go over to aphotocontributor.com and look at your blog and look at some of the postings, and of course, some of your portfolio work over at your website at chrisweeks.net, they can sort of get a feeling of what you're up to and how this stuff's great.
For sure. Thank you so much. I love making photographs.
Yeah, great stuff, Chris. I do appreciate you joining us on the program today, and we look forward to chatting again soon, buddy.
For sure. Take care, man.
Well, there you go. Chris Weeks. This guy is the real deal. Definitely want to check out his work, www.chrisweeks.net. The Inside Analog Photo Radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film and, of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, Worldwide Publicity, Strategic Promotion, Social Media Marketing, and Business Development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at DR5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at Upstrap-Pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at IgerStudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at APUG.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House, over at EastmanHouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.